It's 5:06 and you're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. A quick reminder that we are in our fall membership drive. You can support Wisconsin Public Radio with a pledge at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. Now, is ethical parenting possible? Seems like a simple question, and of course, yes, we'd like to think it is.
But while we may think we're being ethical parents, there are oftentimes things we do to give our own kids a leg up in the world that may involve gaming the system.
Could be something easy, simple, like inviting the team coach over for dinner, or more obvious manipulation, donating money to the kids' school for future favors, maybe.
And according to our next guest, kids notice when their parents use manipulation to give them a boost in life, and the result may be a less ethical younger generation.
Here with us to discuss ethical parenting is contributing editor at New York Magazine, Lisa Miller. Her recent article on the topic appeared in this week's issue of New York Magazine. Lisa, thanks for joining us.
Really happy to be here. Thanks.
Well, I love this line you say, parenthood, like war, is a state in which it's impossible to be moral. How come?
Right. Well, I think that, you know, we're, as parents, we're always walking this line between what's good for our kids and wanting to be, you know, good citizens and pay attention to other people and the good of the community and the good of the world. But when our kids need something, their needs come first. And so we treat everything else as second, and that doesn't make us always so ethical.
Well, and it seems really well-meaning. Of course, it's a natural thing. You want to do well for your kids. But one of the big arguments in your piece is that, hey, if we cut those corners, maybe kids are picking up on that.
Right. I mean, all of the ethicists I talked to for the story, and I talked to a lot, the first thing they said sounds sort of obvious, but it's really important, which is that kids learn by watching you more than what you say. So although you may say, in our neighborhood, we hear a lot of, you get what you get, but you don't get upset. Like, that's what people say to their kids. You get what you get, and you don't get upset. So that's life. But on the other hand, they watch you, you know, calling the your friend who's on the board and yelling at people who don't treat your kid the way you want them to, and calling the teacher and complaining about a grade, and calling the principal and complaining about a grade, and, you know, wrangling behind the scenes to get your kid an internship. And they learn that complaining and bullying and wrangling and possibly cheating are the ways to get the things you want. And that's not what we want to be teaching our kids, I don't think.
But is there kind of an arms race where
Definitely. If
all the other parents are doing this and I'm not, I'm punished for being the good guy?
It's really tricky, right? Because all the other parents are doing it. And not just in New York and L.A. and Chicago, but really all over the country, I think, to greater and lesser degrees and in different kinds of environments. And yeah, that's the problem. I mean, Barry Schwartz, a psychologist at Swarthmore, said to me, you know, it's the opposite of the free rider problem. The free rider problem is, if everybody recycles and you don't recycle, you still benefit from recycling. But if everybody is, you know, gaming the system to get a leg up on behalf of your kids and you don't do it, then you're actually disadvantaging your kid. That's real. That's not a perception thing or a, you know, if I could just be brave, I would be doing the right thing. It's real. And so you have to live in an environment where everybody's looking out for their own kids first and figure out how to navigate.
Well, we hear the phrase, it's not as popular nowadays, but the whole helicopter parent phenomenon, where parents just don't let kids do the things for themselves. Are the ethical shortcuts you're talking about here just another example of that?
I think it's slightly different. But, you know, one psychologist I talked to compared this kind of thing to fixers, the Hollywood people or the mafia people who sort of make sure that the outcome that you want is what happens, even if they get it by illicit means. And this is like that. This is like hanging around in the background and talking to the school administration and talking to the coach and hiring the tutor. It's a kind of scaffolding that gives the kids the impression that they can't actually do it.
I'm just
themselves.
I'm laughing along with a picture of my fellow soccer parents as like mafia thugs going out and leaning on Teach to give my kid the better grade or the better recommendation.
You know, every time I talk about this story on the radio or on TV, somebody, a producer or a photographer or somebody in the background, pulls me aside and says, you know, my friend, sister, aunt is a teacher in a private school or is a teacher in a public school and something. you know, the principal said that the, last night somebody told me this story. The principal said that if the kids were caught drinking at prom, they would all be denied graduation. The kids were caught drinking at prom, and the parents banded together and hired a lawyer so that the kids would graduate. And so what the kids learn is if you get caught doing something bad, you hire a lawyer, and then you get out of it. We're laughing, but it does seem to be showing kids that if you know how to work the system, you can get ahead.
Do kids push back on this? Do they say, hey, let me fight my own battles?
There is a group of kids who are, and these are sort of the heroes of my story. I know a kid who went to a very fancy New York City private high school. And in the spring of his junior year, when everybody was going crazy, you know, doing their SAT prep and, you know, making lists of schools and hiring private college counselors, he basically went on strike. He said, I refuse to do this. This is corrupt. Everybody in my zip code is taking SAT prep. It's ridiculous. It inflates the scores. It's meaningless. I'm not doing it. And his parents, who are lovely people, tried to be supportive and privately were so anxious that he was throwing his life away. And in the end, what they feared would happen actually happened, which is that he didn't get into college at all. And he hung around at home, and he drove them a little bit crazy for a year. And then but he learned that he really did want to go to college. And he is now happily studying classics and composing electronic music at a school that's not in the U.S. News Top 50, and he's proud of himself, and his parents are proud of him, and you have to think that that story is a success story. And the kid led the charge, not the parents.
We're talking to Lisa Miller from New York Magazine. She wrote a piece about ethical parenting. We want to hear from you. Do you see examples like this, maybe more Wisconsin-type examples, parents just doing too much for their kid and maybe bending some rules, ethical bad examples for their kids while they're trying to get their kids ahead? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. We'll pick up this conversation in a few minutes. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret, here with Veronica Rickard, and we pick up our conversation now with Lisa Miller. She's contributing editor at New York Magazine. We're talking about the ethics of parenting, or the lack of same in some cases. The story so far, she found that a lot of parents are willing to cut serious ethical corners when it comes to their kids' success in school, in sports, you name it. And it's a bad lesson that kids really often do pick up on. Lisa, let's talk about some more examples just before the break there. You mentioned getting SAT prep. Is that, it seems like something a lot of people might do if they're worried about getting kids into college. Is that something we would see as going too far?
Well, I think, you know, it's cultural, right? In certain groups of people, SAT prep is normal. It inflates scores. It makes scores higher than people who don't get SAT prep. So, you know, on the face of it, it's an uneven playing field, right? And some of the game to increase the prep and, you know, get better and better scores has led some schools to say, these are now meaningless. These tests are now meaningless. In New York City, an association of private elementary schools has decided not to use these private school tests as a measure for acceptance because the prep is so rampant that it makes the score worthless. So, you know, yes and no. It's not unethical to get your kid prepped for a test that's important, but to participate in this sort of ramping up of the arms race may be unethical. And it's something that parents need to think about. And I talked to this SAT tutor who charges $22,000 per kid per year for prep.
Wow.
Right?
How do I get into that gig?
In the elite, you know, in sort of for kids who go to the elite Manhattan schools. And he said something so interesting to me, which was that every time he meets a new family, the mom pulls him aside and says, we're not really like this.
Huh.
We're not the kinds of people who blah, 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 pay tens of thousands of dollars on SAT prep. We come from Wisconsin. We come from Minnesota. We grew up in Sacramento. We grew up in the suburbs. We aren't these people, except they are. And so it's an acknowledgement from them that there's something wrong about this. It's not with their values. It doesn't go with their values. And yet they feel that they have to do it because everybody else is doing it. And it's very hard, back to the Barry Schwartz free rider problem, it's very hard to be the one parent who says, yeah, this game isn't for me. I'm not doing it. Not in the culture where everybody's doing it.
So why do we do this? Why we wouldn't maybe cut that ethical corner for our own benefit, and we're aware maybe that we're blurring the lines for our kids. So how do we reconcile that?
I think, first and foremost, we're parents, and we believe that it's our job to protect our children and look out for their safety and their prosperity and their health and their future, and we're right about that. I mean, that's what parents do, and they do it across, nationalities and socioeconomic strata, and that's what we do. But I also think that there's a current anxiety among parents, among Americans, about war and economic collapse and warming and all kinds of things. And we feel like we have to give our kids the tools they need to succeed, and we don't know what those tools are. And so there's a kind of desperation on the part of parents that makes them more venal, more mean, more competitive, more aggressive. And in the story, I compare them to I tell the story of chimpanzees. Chimpanzees and bonobos. Chimpanzees are really mean creatures. They're hierarchical. They kill each other's children. Bonobos, which are closely genetically related, are the loveliest people, loveliest creatures on earth. And they take care of each other's children, and they have sex all the time, and they're very communitarian. And the difference is that resources are scarce among chimpanzees. They're seasonal. There's competition for food. And among bonobos, resources are plentiful. So if you put humans in a situation of scarcity or even perceived scarcity, they start to act like chimpanzees and not like bonobos. And, I think that that's what's happening now. Whether the scarcity is real or imagined, perceived, I think is an open question, but that's how parents feel.
Well, I want to touch on an irony, though, that you sort of alluded to earlier. You just mentioned parents who are trying to get the tools for their kids to succeed, not always sure what they are. Maybe it's the fanciest education possible, but maybe it's self-sufficiency, self-reliance, and a good ethical compass. And in going for the one, we may be sacrificing the others.
I think that's absolutely true. And in fact, psychological research shows that when you start to do too much for your kids, they start to believe that they can't do it themselves. One psychologist I talked to said, you create crippled kids or entitled kids or both. I thought, wow, that's really bad, being crippled and entitled. But I think that is the danger, right? I mean, lots and lots of books have been written in the last 2 or 3 years about how children need to fail, that the way that they become resilient and independent and full of grit, which is what we all want our kids to be, is to let them fail. And so we have to be brave enough somehow to step back and not make the call to the, our friend on the board or to the teacher, to the principal or to the coach, and not harangue the theater director for the better part and not give the expensive Christmas present. And it's very difficult in the culture that we live in.
Well, yeah, there's like this, as a parent, like a constant civil war in my brain between the side that wants to go out and help my babies do everything and not get hurt, and the part that says basically what you just said, they need to develop some grit and I need to sit on my hands and shut up for a while. As a parent, how do you resolve that, whether we're talking about day-to-day stuff or these ethical issues?
I so refuse to give parenting advice.
No, but what do you do?
I think it's really, really hard to be a parent, and there's no right way. And I think what I tried to do in the piece And what I hope the piece succeeds in doing is describing that civil war in all of our brains. And I think none of us is immune to that civil war. And in certain, you know, hot houses like New York City, the civil war is, you know, very acute and bloody. And in other places, maybe not so much, but we all deal with it every single day. Because, you know, as Stephen Osma says in his book Against Fairness, if you're given this ethical problem, if presented with this ethical problem where you push a button and 10 children die somewhere far away, but your children live, well, who wouldn't push the button, right? Who wouldn't protect their child and, you know, put all of the other children in the world second? It's a horrible truth, but there it is.
All right. That's a good place to leave it. Lisa, thank you so much for joining us today.
Really happy to be here. Thanks.
That was Lisa Miller, contributing editor at New York Magazine. Just a quick update on our pledge drive. We've had 7 pledges so far this hour. 7 pledges, looking for 28 more by 6 o'clock. You can join in at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
That's 888-202-2552. And we always welcome your pledges online at WPR.org. Coming up, our guest says we are in a golden age of TV theme songs, songs that keep you listening and really sort of shape the way you feel about watching your favorite program. We'll hear some of the greatest hits of TV theme songs, past and present. You're listening to Central Time right here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.